What up, what up, what up? We are back again for another great episode. The one episode we made a case. It's your boy LQ, Mr. BHQ, and I'm joined here by the Matt Okada, bro. We got a fun show today, man. What's going on with you?
I'm excited. It's going to be wild and crazy.
Yeah, wild and crazy is like what we want here sometimes, and we also want to be informative. So there's a lot of folks that are coming outside right now. Like redraft season, I feel like it's here. The league meetings happen at Memorial Day weekend cookout. The boys got together, boys and girls, let's just say, got together and talked about what are we doing this summer with league rules and the format. I mean, I just had mine, Okada. I don't know if you had yours. Like, my home league is close to my heart. Like, we're sitting here arguing, like, do we let kickers back in? Like, no, they're not coming back.
Yes.
No,
Okada, they're humans.
No, they're humans. But look, I ain't trying to go on waiver wires for a kicker, man. Like, I'm good off that. I am stressed enough that we still have the defense in, and I want to go super flex. So that's the biggest issue here with me and my home league, man. Like, have you had any league meetings yet?
This is going to potentially give you the conniptions, Laquan, but my home league is a dynasty league that has kickers and defense.
Oh my God. So I got to hold on to a defense for years?
Yes, not just one. Not just one, because you can't survive with just one kicker or defense in a dynasty league. I usually carry like three kickers and three defenses. It's crazy.
That is wasted roster spots, bro. Come on.
It's fun.
It's fun, yes, but I want to stash. I am the guy that's fighting for more taxi squad like spots. I'm fighting for more bench spots. True. I'm fighting for just get defenses and kickers out of the way. I'm done with it. Like, I love DST. I was big on DST, especially with them changing the return yards and all that other stuff. But I'm like, nah, man. I rather stash guys like Calvin Austin that I'm hoping and praying one day he will be free. There's guys that are on my taxi squad right now. Jatavion Sanders, he's still there. I haven't moved him off, but I need to see that breakout. So I'm fighting for these things, man. Yeah, I mean, look, man, league meetings are annoying, man. I'm so glad I'm not the commissioner anymore. So I'm glad that, you know, I'm just stepping back and just being in the crowd complaining as well. Fair. But let's get into some fantasy news, man. I mean, a lot has been going on with camp and injuries and guys holding out. I mean, Bengals, it's a little wild right now. But more so for fantasy aspects, there is some question marks with some guys, man. And I cannot believe my eyes earlier this week when I seen Kenneth Walker limited at minicamp with an ankle injury. Bro, what are we doing? Like, already?
Yeah, we're starting where we left off, apparently. Now, The glass half full perspective on this is the coaching staff has said that it's minor. So maybe he'll be okay and he'll be participating in a week or two and he'll be completely healthy by season's time. Honestly, I think that's more likely than not. The glass half empty perspective is Kenneth Walker is always dealing with these little naggy things, apparently, and he's already got one this camp. Now, maybe that means he gets the one out for this season, so that means he's full season healthy. I don't know if that's actually going to work. Yeah. I'm not shifting draft plans around Kenneth Walker based off this yet, but it is definitely something to bookmark. All these, almost 100% of the time, these camp reports are that. Something to bookmark, something to keep an eye on. How serious is it? Does it last? Not just with injury, but with like, well, this player's playing really well, or this player dropped the ball 15 times. It's Ja'Marr Chase.
I do remember that. That was a wild time in the fantasy show.
Yeah.
What were we thinking?
He didn't know what a football was. He couldn't catch it for the life of him. It's, you know, keep an eye on it. If he's back in a week, I don't think we need to worry. And the same Kenneth Walker injury concerns that we've always had will be present going into the year. If something lingers further, now that injury concern gets exacerbated, and now we might be knocking him down in drafts.
Listen, when I see stuff like this, I know it's June. I am a little crazy when it comes to annoying things like this, especially with a guy that has a past of just countless injuries and injuries and injuries. This just makes me feel so much more comfortable when I get past that 10th round. If he's still there, Zach Charbonnet seems like a great guy to have on your roster as an RB3. And I say that a lot of people don't like hearing that. Like, people want to have that strong punch at that RB3 spot, but I want my handcuff to have the same upside as that RB1. You know what I mean? So I want Zach Charbonnet on my rosters as of now. If I'm going outside and going to some draft parties, like, I'm keeping Zach Charbonnet on the hush, because there's some folks like, I use my home league as kind of like guinea pigs. Like, oh man, Kenneth Walker injured. Nobody even batted an eye in the group chat talking about Zach Charbonnet. So I'm like, all right, he's on my list to go get, you know. So it's one of those annoying things too, you know, when a guy has a pass of injuries. I'm talking about Kyle Pitts and dealing with injuries in minicamp. And it just feels like this is bad timing because like there was already rumors of trades and there's already, you know, the little bumps in the road of him trying to connect and trying to be a guy that could step up in this offense. And now we're dealing with injuries. Like, come on, Okada, is it over? Like, it's over. We're done, right?
Okay, here's what I'll say. As a massive Kyle Pitts truther who stayed in longer than a lot of people, it's basically over, okay? Even if he was fully healthy, we wouldn't be super confident that he was going to do anything for fantasy. However, I will give you a caveat here. It's so over, and the injuries haven't even played into this yet, but it's so over that his ADP is tight end 18. 18?
Good.
Listen, I understand, or we've maybe given up hope on him being the tight end 4 or the tight end 3 or maybe even the tight end 1. I understand that. But tight end 18 pre-injury dip, if he falls to tight end 20, tight end 22, you're telling me you have no interest in adding a low-end backup tight end in any leagues that are deep enough to have a backup tight end or in best ball or something like that, who, if he finally hit, he could be the number one tight end to roll. And if he doesn't, you just cut him after week 2 and it's not a big deal.
I'm just going to chime in on best ball leagues because I've built some leagues lately. I mean, look, you go to freaking Underdog, man, and use promo code FTN. You get matched up to $1,000. I mean, look, we got to pay the bills here. So that's a lot of dough for real, man. I'm drafting all summer if I can get up to bonus points with 1,000. But how I've been building this tight end like situation here, like I love grabbing me some Zach Ertz. I love grabbing me some Hunter Henry. I love grabbing me even some Janu. So it's like, I look for guys that are going to have that potential you were talking about stepping up. I got a couple where I got TJ Hockenson, I got Zach Ertz, and then I got Kyle Pitts as that tight end 3. I see your vision, but this is only for best ball. This is only for best ball, baby. This is only for best ball. Because when we talk redraft, which is coming up, and the guys are coming outside, and we're looking to get a tight end 2, because I'm in a league where I feel like that flex position, you can swap 2 tight ends. Like I've done it plenty of times. And I think Kyle Pitts as a tight end 2 for most of these redraft situations feels like a setup, man. It does feel like a setup. I could see the hesitation because like, I just don't get what the disconnect is. Is it the quarterback? Is it the play calling? Is it Kyle Pitts constantly going into a season banged up? Like, what is his conditioning? Like, what is happening for him not to be able to get this to click?
Something tells me he's maybe not the hardest worker in the locker room. That's just kind of a vibe check thing. Yeah. And it plays into maybe a lot of the things you just mentioned. But regardless, honestly, a trade might be a good thing for him. Fresh scenery, an organization that doesn't hate his guts despite spending a top draft pick on him. Maybe he could find a resurgence somewhere. But mostly, I think it's over. Unless you can tuck him in the back or read a best ball roster for Super Bowl.
It's a train that it continues on going, man. I mean, the fantasy streets, they love them some Kyle Pitts, but I can't buy a ticket this year. I bought it last year, and it was the worst experience of my life. But moving on. Oh, yeah, that thing went off the tracks. It went underground. It went into a grave. That's where it went. So moving on. And I don't like to take jabs at guys that are down because obviously this player plays for the 49ers. Man. Look, I'm a huge Rams fan. I'm very competitive. I'm very territorial. Don't say nothing about my Rams. And when it comes to the 49ers, it doesn't, you know, I don't feel totally bad that they're in shambles right now. But a guy that I just love grabbing in drafts, got some updated news, man. Brandon Ayuk is likely to be placed on the PUP list. This does not seem good, Okada. Are you still grabbing him in those later rounds, even with the discount?
No, not really. I mean, it depends on where the price settles to, I suppose. But I had Ayuk as my lead, you know, headline sell in the most recent Moves to Make article here at FTN. In Dynasty, because these injuries have been nagging. You know, he's missed significant time several years, but more than that, like even when he's on the field, he's been inconsistent. Last year before he got injured, he was terrible. And yes, Debo is gone, but Debo is a very unique, like niche role. Ricky Pearsall is taking a step forward, I would expect, and he is much more of a potentially legitimate number one receiver. Plus, you've still got George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey taking targets there, and Juwan Jennings stepped up big last year. He might be the number one target in this offense this year. It's hard to know. So I'm a little tired of Ayuk, like, you know, this guy is talented and he should probably be pretty good for fantasy. And then he's just not, and he disappoints. He's had one decent season, really, in his career. So I'm not drafting him unless, I mean, he falls to absurdly low prices, but this was kind of expected too, that he'd start the season on the pup list, in my opinion. And it's just another reason to fade unless the price becomes absurd.
Yeah. Cause here's the thing, man, when you see Brandon Ayuk down there late in those rounds and like, and of course we're drafting right now, underdog, you know, and I feel like when I see him there and I want to add like a wide receiver 4, I want to add like a wide receiver 5, I don't feel terrible about it. But then it's like, how long is this guy going to be out? Because if things go left very early with my 2 or 3, you know, wide receivers that I have, one gets injured, one is underperforming, your roster is looking weak for pass catchers. So that's why I feel like when you see guys at discount, it's not always a great grab because you don't have that timetable of return of when you're going to get any type of production. Let's say Ayuk returns back to week 7. What does your roster actually look like from a pass catcher perspective waiting on a guy like this that still has that question mark if he's going to hit the ground running? You know what I mean? Because we saw him come into last season kind of cold because he was holding out. And I don't want to say the injury led to that, but conditioning and having that football-ready body playing at a high level, it does matter. Because if you're home just watching film and making TikToks and leaking like, oh, yeah, Jaden Daniels FaceTiming, like, it's all great and cool and stuff, but I need to see you on the field. I need to see you sweating and staying in football shape even though you're holding out. And that's not what we saw from Ayuk. That's why I faded this year.
Just for the heck of it, half PPR, would you rather have Stephon Diggs or Brandon Ayuk?
Stephon Diggs. 100%.
Khalil Shakir?
Khalil Shakir, 100%, because that's a security blanket right there.
Darnell Mooney?
Ooh. Mooney. I'll take Mooney.
Josh Downs.
I like this. Josh Downs. Oh, my God. You just went in, like, reverse order. I mean, Josh Downs is king.
Those are the 4 guys going around Brandon Ayuk on either side in underdog ADP right now. So, wow. Like, he's got to drop lower than that for me to be interested.
Absolutely, because I'm taking Downs, Mooney, Shakir, in that order right there. Diggs, and then Ayuk out of that. So.
Now, the next guy is Cooper Kupp, who I know you hate his guts, so I won't ask you that one.
So, yeah, I feel like when you're looking at Cooper Kupp in those later rounds, man, you got to account for, like, the numbers have dropped. His production has dropped. His last season, it just did not look like the Cooper Kupp we'd known and loved. Like, when you're looking at Cooper Kupp as possibly as your wide receiver 3, you're banking on him to perform as at least a wide receiver 2. Correct. But here's the problem. He's going to an offense that I feel as though they don't even know who's going to be playing what yet. It's still going to be a lot to figure out this summer. You have JSN who can operate out of that slot at a high level. You have Cooper Kupp that also operates out of that slot. I don't see him making an impact if he's going to be playing primarily outside. And it doesn't seem like it's very productive to have Cooper Kupp and JSN to kind of swap back and forth from the slot and outside. So it's one of the situations I'd rather just back off and let it play itself out because I need a valuable flex play week to week.
Well, I guess we're not taking him or Brandon Ayuk then.
This is a great segue into our next segment, man. And it's Make a Case. Dun, dun. I couldn't do the Law and Order thing for copyright thing. So I was just like, I'm just going to do the first dun dun. And then you could just finish the rest. But more so, we got some players, man, that are going to be up for question. And I feel like there's a lot of players on this list that I'm just kind of just unsure of, or I'm just flat out secretly, I'm out. I just need to hear it. I need to hear you as the lawyer wearing multiple hats as a prosecutor, as a defender. Give me just a simple fact of like, is these guys worth the roster spot at cost at their ADP? Like, am I going to be a happy camper when I go off the draft board with these guys?
I'm going to give you the best I can on both sides. And sometimes I believe both sides a little bit. Sometimes I only believe one. I'll leave it up to you to be the judge, though. You're going to decide for our people what to actually do.
So first up, in question, Okada. I like to call him Trevor Mid-Lawrence, you know, but I'm not going to call him that today because I need to be a fair judge. But I need to hear. I need to hear the cases of Trevor Lawrence. I mean,
all right.
What are we doing at QB 18, man? Oh, yes.
Here's the case for Trevor Lawrence, Laquan. First of all, he's the number one overall pick. He was the savior of football at one point when he was drafted. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been great since then, I understand. But what has his weaponry been? Let's take a quick gander. 2021, his target leaders, Marvin Jones and LaVisca Chenault? Gross. 2022, Christian Kirk and Zay Jones. Now, that's not great, but it's not terrible. And you know what he did that year? He was the QB7 in fantasy. 23, Evan Ingram and Calvin Ridley. Also not superstar level, but pretty decent guys, and he was the QB12. And 2024, last year, Brian Thomas Jr. and Evan Ingram, now he's finally got a stud in there. He was a QB11 through week 9 before he got injured. Now he's got Brian Thomas Jr. and Travis Hunter, a freak wide receiver who sounds like he's going to mainly play wide receiver. Plus, they added Liam Cohen to run the offense, who just helped Baker Mayfield finish as a QB4. That's big. You want to look at statistical numbers? FTN Stats Hub? Guess who was the third best accuracy rate among all quarterbacks last year behind Geno Smith and Jordan Love? I'll give you a hint. His name rhymes with Dever Dorrance. And his draft price right now is QB18. So you're getting a guy who's finished as a QB1 basically every year. He's had half decent receivers. Now he has great ones. And you're getting him at QB18. That sounds like a smash for me.
For our audio listeners, Okada had a green tape check mark on his forehead as the defender, the public defender for Trevor Lawrence. Now okay. He's inserted the X, the red X, as the prosecutor. This is his evil.
Let's get real here. Right now. Let's get real. Trevor Lawrence is a bad quarterback, Laquan. Everybody knows this. You called him Trevor Mid-Lawrence. Like, that's a fantasy-based understatement based off the fact that he throws enough to sometimes put up QB1 fantasy numbers, but he's a bad quarterback. Last year, despite having Brian Thomas Jr., out of 36 qualified quarterbacks, he was 35th in completion percentage. He was 28th in passer rating. He was 31st in EPA per dropback. He was 31st in interception-worthy throw rate. That's another FTN Stats Hub goodie for you. He's bad. He always has been pretty bad. He hasn't improved. He has to learn a new system this year, and that guy earlier who talked about Travis Hunter being so great as his number two, well, he's only going to play wide receiver some of the time, probably. He's going to miss a bunch of snaps, catching his breath from playing cornerback. Plus, while he did add this guy who plays half wide receiver, he lost Evan Ingram and he lost Christian Kirk, both of whom have been very reliable targets for him in recent years. You can get Jordan Love, J.J. McCarthy, E.J. Stroud, heck, Michael Penix Jr. or Matthew Stafford in the same range or later than Trevor Lawrence. I'd rather have any of those guys who have less of a history being bad. I'm out.
Oh my God, you guys, and I say you guys as the prosecutor and a defendant. I mean, Okada's wearing multiple hats today, guys. Like, this is freaking amazing. Cause like when I first seen you put this on, I was just like, this is gold, man. This is gold. But on to the one in question, man. And listen, I hear both sides. I am more so on the prosecutor side on this one, because I feel like we've seen Trevor Lawrence and we've seen the outcome of it from real life and in fantasy. I respect that QB12 season because, again, there was a lot of ups and downs. Evan Ingram, he's banged up sometimes. Christian Kirk himself. And then that run game was not complimentary to Trevor Lawrence. We have yet to see that run game to be anywhere near its peak. But it comes down to Trevor Lawrence as a core in expectations when you're drafting him. And in real life expectations, that boy was John Elway, apparently. Or he was the next best thing since Andrew Luck. I have not seen it. I've seen Austin Davis and Sean Hill these last couple of seasons. Yeah, Okada's looking like, who are these people? There's legendary Rams players that were keeping us above water when they were gone through their QB cycles. But anyway, I'm out. I don't think I can honestly be sold right now on Trevor Lawrence. I'm not losing sleep on him because there's plenty of other quarterbacks that you mentioned in that range that I'd rather take those shots at, because I'd rather be disappointed getting a Matthew Stafford as a Rams fan, which ain't going to happen. And I'd rather be disappointed with a Sam Darnold or Geno Smith because I made those decisions, you know, like I took that gamble to take that somewhat of a QB2 cap, but that could be Trevor Lawrence as well, again, with more injuries in a down year and bad, more decision-making that are just not looking like a QB1. So The case is closed. Get him out of here. Send him away to the fantasy streets and let them debate. Now, the next one in question. Now, Okada, last night I got a little heat. And this is me taking the gavel away and the judge hat right now. I said there could be opportunity for Daniel Jones to be a top 12 quarterback. Now, I don't want you to go out there and try to make a case out there as strong as can be, because we might get some flack, because I got some flack last night for saying that. Like, they killed me. And I'm like, he's free. So, Okada, please do your best to make a case for Daniel Jones, who's going in the 17th round or not even drafted.
All right. The good news is, Aquan, I don't have to make a case that he's going to be the QB1, so no one has to come for me with the gallows and the pitchforks. All I have to do is make a case that he's going to outperform his value, which is QB29 in ADP.
Wow.
And it's a pretty easy case, because all he has to do to beat this draft price is beat Anthony Richardson for the starting job in Indianapolis. Let me tell you how easy that is, Laquan. Anthony Richardson is the worst quarterback in the NFL right now. Not the worst starting quarterback. I did not say. I said the worst quarterback.
Trey Lance? He's worse than...
No, Trey Lance is worse. Give me Trey Lance any day of the week. Listen, we talk about, like, ooh, maybe Anthony Richardson can take the Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson. He's a runner who doesn't throw that well, but then he learns how to throw really well, and he becomes one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Track. The problem is, those guys weren't great at the start of the year. They were not as bad as an Anthony Richardson. He is doo-doo. He is Tim Tebow levels of awful. He will not get the starting job, which means Daniel Jones will get the starting job. When he's had the starting job in his career, he's averaged 15.1 fantasy points per game. That's QB16-ish. So he's a mid-range QB1 for as long as he's a starter. This year, he's got a pretty solid pass catcher group. He's got Michael Pittman. He's got Josh Downs, who we talked about earlier. He's got Alec Pierce. He added Tyler Warren. And he's got Jonathan Taylor. So that Colts team is starting to pull together a little bit. And he runs the ball over 30 rushing yards per game, which ranks top 10 among quarterbacks since he was drafted. So you're getting him as a complete dart throw, a backup in super flex, or like a QB3 or 4 in best ball. All he has to do is win the job, and he returns value. Yes, sign me up. Easy.
Sign me Smash. Up. Smash.
No.
And here
no.
we go.
No.
The personality switch is Jim Carrey level right here, Okada.
Laquan. Daniel Jones is trash. He has not been able to keep a starting job healthy, keep a starting job over complete non-quarterbacks in the NFL, guys who should never have sniffed the NFL football field. If he loses the job to the younger, higher upside, maybe we want to see who this guy is play in Anthony Richardson, he's a completely wasted pick. If he wins the job and then he loses it after 6 games because they're 0-6, which is very likely, he's a completely wasted pick. If he wins the job and then he gets hurt, which he has basically every year of his career, he's a wasted pick. And if he wins the job and keeps it all year, then he's probably a mid-range QB2 because that's what he's been his whole career, which is not what you're going for with last round picks. You want upside. I want a guy who could pop up and suddenly be a QB1. Hear me out. I'd rather draft Jalen Milroe a couple rounds later, who does not have a starting job at all. Because if Sam Darnold gets hurt or has a bad start to the season and he's out, Jalen Milroe is a QB1 locked and loaded. I'd rather have that than Mr. If things go well, he's a mid-range QB2. Get Daniel Jones out.
What? That was insane. Jalen Milroe? Dude, I do not expect to see Jalen Milroe to even play football this year, but golly.
I don't either, but it's still more valuable than Daniel Jones, according to Mr.
Respect. I got to be honest. This is a strong case. This is one of those things where it's like, flip a coin. Because, like, I love chasing upside, and I just see the upside there with Daniel Jones in 2022. He was a top 5 deep passer. That is great for a Josh Downs. That is great for A.D. Mitchell, who can stretch the field. You left him out as a pass catcher as well. And for Tyler Warren, who is versatile as well. So it's like you have all these great pass catchers, and I think Daniel Jones never really had that solid group. We talk about Daniel Jones having Malik Nabers. Great. But Malik Nabers in who? You know what I mean? Malik Nabers and who else? There was never a who else with Daniel Jones. So that was my biggest issue. So now he's in a place where the starting job is there for him. It's there. It's wide open for him. He has that rushing upside as well. Those 700 yards he had in 2022, I'm not going to ignore that, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to ignore that because I need that on my squad. I need that late round dart throw. He's undrafted or QB29. And you have Okada, the prosecutor, saying he will take Jalen Milroe over Daniel Jones. Man. Ladies and another project, by the way. This is literally same, but different, but still the same. I just don't understand it. So with that being said, give it to the defender, man. Okada, I just need it. I need Daniel Jones in my life with that rushing upside and the complete free nature of it, man.
All right. Listen.
All right.
Win either way. Whatever the judge decides, I'm a winner, so I'll take it.
The winner is the people who are listening to us, you know, and let's take a quick commercial break so everybody can get their thoughts collected and get ready for the rest of these players we're about to get into. Back again, make a case. We got the prosecutor Okada, and then we have our public defender Okada making some strong cases, man. And look, this next player, man, there is so much upside here with him, and I don't want to be too biased on him. I mean, honestly, it is tight end LSU, Mason Taylor, tight end 25, and he's on the Jets now with Justin Fields that we're all hoping get that upside. He's slowly but surely, he's putting it on, ladies and gentlemen, for our audio listeners. Defender Okada is on the mic right now. Mason Taylor, what are we doing, man? Make a case.
Juan, who was the number one tight end in fantasy last year?
Brock Bowers.
A rookie. What about the year before that? Was it perhaps Sam Laporta, a rookie?
Yes. Okay.
It's interesting. So you mean to tell me that the whole tight ends take 3 years to develop, you can't draft them in fantasy as a rookie thing is ancient history, and these rookie kids can dominate year one? That's what I'm hearing. So we got Mason Taylor coming in. Everybody's concerned. Oh, he's a rookie. We can't draft him in fantasy. Throw that out. That's ancient history. We're over that idea.
Yeah. That's the guys that are still writing the scores on pencil and pad paper. Correct. Like, no, we're moving on to the modern days.
We're juggling five apps at once now.
Yes. Facts.
Here's the thing. He's over in New York and has a legit shot. Maybe not a legit shot. Maybe a odds on shot to beat out Alan Lazard and Josh Reynolds and whoever else they've got at the bottom of that depth chart for the number two target on the team behind Garrett Wilson. Those guys aren't stud wide receiver twos. No one else on that roster is exciting at all. Mason Taylor is a highly drafted, good pass catching tight end who could easily step up and be that number two. And so then people are gonna be like, oh, well, Justin Fields, he's the quarterback. They're not gonna throw, and he's not a very good quarterback. How is he gonna produce for fantasy? Who was Justin Fields' tight end in Chicago? I venture to wonder. Was it perhaps Cole Kmet, who was the tight end six in 2022 and 2023 when Justin Fields was the main starter for Chicago? Why, yes, it was. So you're telling me Justin Fields, who turned Cole Kmet into the tight end six, is throwing to the number two target on his team, a rookie who has historically over the last 2 years finishes the number one tight end in fantasy 2 years in a row. Oh, and by the way, he's got Hall of Fame bloodlines because Mason Taylor's dad is Jason Taylor and his uncle is Zach Thomas. Don't forget that. So we're talking about everything is lined up for this guy to be a tight end one, and he's being drafted as the tight end 25. How does that make any sense? No way draft.
That's a strong case. I cannot wait to hear this defended. The prosecutor, he has arrived. He has arrived. All right, Okada, start cooking.
Okay. Yes, Brock Bowers and Sam Laporta were the number one tight ends as rookies. They were unbelievably good prospects. Brock Bowers, arguably the best tight end prospect we've ever seen. Mason Taylor is okay. He's a good and potentially future great tight end prospect. However, he is a bit developmental, unlike Colston Loveland and Tyler Warren, who come into this year in this draft class much more likely to be a stud out of the gate. Mason Taylor is more of a developmental prospect. He's barely just 21 years old. I think he needs time to grow physically and as a receiver. In my rookie profile, I compared those other two guys to guys who were tight end ones right up very quickly or had long stretches of tight end ones. My comps for Mason Taylor were Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave, that kind of Packers duo who got drafted at the same time.
Yeah.
They're not bad, but they weren't immediate studs. Tucker Kraft needed a year before he could break out. And yes, he should see decent targets, but it's in a likely very meh offense where being the number two or the number three isn't all that exciting. Justin Fields did turn Cole Kmet to a decent tight end, but he does not throw a lot. And so being the number two or the number three isn't going to be all that great. And he has very little, if any, touchdown upside. He scored very rarely in college, and this team is not going to see the red zone very much. So, yeah, the tight end 25 doesn't sound all that bad, but if it's for a guy who's going to score, you know, two touchdowns and have 400 yards, is it worth going for? You said you want upside, Laquan. Mason Taylor doesn't have any. Get me out of here.
Ooh, baby, mic dropped on that one. And look, I want to go backtrack to a little bit of what you said. The touchdowns were my concern. That was what I was going to lead with, and I'm glad you finished with that, and I can put a little button on that. We need touchdowns with our tight ends. I don't think Mason Taylor's in a situation like he was, like Brock Bowers was in, where, you know, he lacked touchdowns, but he had volume. And I don't think that he's going to be up there in volume when it comes to, you know, Garrett Wilson being the head honcho there. Garrett Wilson could have like basically 156 targets this season. And that's just easy work right there. With that said, he will be the operation of that offense. And if I'm not going to get any touchdowns, because again, that's what Cole Kmet kind of lacked as well. It was touchdowns. He had mid-tier volume. He had untapped potential, but we didn't get the ton and ton of touchdowns that he should have got, like some of the greats of the Mark Andrews, Kittles, and et cetera, et cetera. They kept trying to push Kittle up there into that big three talk. I mean, they kept trying to push Cole Kmet up there, but it just didn't work out because of the quarterback play, et cetera, et cetera. I'm out. I'm out on Mason Taylor, and I see the ADP, and I understand it, and he's a rookie, and we've seen two rookies back-to-back years do the damn thing, but the situation, it just looks nasty. Nothing against Tanner Strand. I know he's coming from the lineage of the Ben Johnson colony and stuff over there that they had in Detroit, but at the same time, it's like I'm not willing to gamble on a tight end in New York as well.
The judge has spoken.
We're out of here. I mean, look, I know there's some people that will want to jump on the Mason Taylor train, but are we jumping back on old man time of Travis freaking Kelce, man? Tight end six. That's the ninth round, folks. Like, I need to hear this case. I need to hear this case, man.
All right. Should you draft Travis Kelce as the tight end six? That's a very fair question, Laquan. Well, let me tell you something. Travis Kelce has not finished lower than tight end six since 2015. Damn. That was a decade ago. He has been this good or better, and for the record, it was mostly tight end one over that stretch, for a decade. And in a down year last year in 2024, bad, quote-unquote bad year, he was, in fact, the tight end six with 97 catches on 133 targets. He is a PPR monster, even if his efficiency and his touchdowns have fallen off, which, admittedly, they have. He is older. He's turning 36 years old. You know, it's a fair case. Well, maybe it's not a fair case. When I mention Hall of Fame Chiefs tight ends from history, who else might you think of? Legends of the game. Maybe they also play for the Falcons. Oh, Tony Gonzalez. Interesting that you bring him up, Laquan. Interesting.
My guy.
Tony Gonzalez at 36 years old. 93 catches, 930 yards, 8 touchdowns, tight end 2 overall. Well, when you're this good, when you are a Hall of Fame caliber tight end, turning 35, 36 years old doesn't matter. Age is just a number, baby. Number like 10, the number of consecutive seasons Kelce has made the Pro Bowl. So sure, you could draft one-year wonder Jonnu Smith or tight end only league superstar Mark Andrews if you want to. Give me the guy who gets peppered with targets by the best QB in the game and hasn't finished lower than this in a decade. Easy.
Wow. This defender sounds like he listens to a lot of Taylor Swift. Okay. He's arrived.
Okay.
The prosecutor has arrived.
Yeah. The defender does listen to a lot of Taylor Swift, which is why you know you shouldn't trust what he says. Okay. So let me give you the case against Travis Kelce. I mean, come on. The guy's older than I am, which is saying something now. He's ancient. He's 2 years older than the Jaguars general manager. All right. And we've seen it hurt his yards per reception, touchdowns, and success rate have all gone down each of the last two seasons consecutively. And yes, he saw 133 targets last year. Mr. Public Defender makes a good point. But what Mr. Public Defender forgot to mention is that Rashee Rice and Hollywood Brown combined for 6 games played last year. They were not there. Now they're going to be back. They got both guys back, plus Xavier Worthy, who was kind of for the first half of the season, then sort of came on later in the season. Spoiler alert, tease for later in this show.
Oh,
he's now fully entrenched as a stud youngster in this pass catching core. When the targets come down, which they will because all these guys are back, and the efficiency simply isn't there for Travis Kelce anymore because he's 88 years old, it's going to be very hard for him to meet tight end 6 value. I don't even know if he'll meet tight end 1 value in general. So this is the time to get out on Mr. 36-year-old Travis Kelce.
This one is, I don't want to say it's difficult when he does come up and you're on the clock, because I look at it like this. He's going in the 9th round, which is pretty cheap for a Travis Kelce. We'll probably never, ever see, you know, that like again. But at the same time, it's like, I don't want that risk for a position that I only really need one of, you know, like I only rock with one tight end for the entire season. And if I'm going to pay that hefty price, I want a guy that I feel as though I could start and forget. I don't know if I could start Travis Kelce, because again, last season was the first time ever it was a week to week thing. Like, do I start Kelce this week? Like, I don't want to be put in that position holding on to a Hunter Henry, you know, when I could have just drafted Hunter Henry, you know? So it's like one of those situations where I got to bang the gavel down to where, like, we are not in on Travis Kelce. Send him away. Take him away. He is off the draft board, but for somebody else's team. Like, it ain't going to be ours. Famer. Yeah. Great career. Great guy. He secured the bag. Get your money. I'm good. You know what?
Which says hang him up, Travis. Confirmed.
Yeah. Yeah. He just stop. Just go into sunset with Taylor Swift. Have a family. Real. Enjoy life. You know, that's it, man.
Yeah.
Now this other tight end, I am a little skeptical because it's Detroit and they've had some major changes. And the major change is Ben Johnson. And I'm not quite sure with Sam LaPorta as the tight end 4, if that feels right. So I need to hear both sides of this. Please make a case for Mr. LaPorta.
All right. Sam LaPorta had a not so great sophomore season last year in 2024, right, Laquan? It was kind of disappointing. Can we agree?
Okay.
He had just 83 targets. He had just 60 catches. He still finished as the tight end 7 in half PPR, despite the drop in volume. Meanwhile, he still scored a gazillion touchdowns. He scored 17 through his first 2 seasons. That's the most ever by a tight end, behind only one guy, Rob Gronkowski, whose record probably will never be broken. The thing really for me with Sam LaPorta is this is less about Sam LaPorta and more about the other guys. Okay? Because I understand the Ben Johnson thing isn't great. Things might take a slight step back for this offense and for Sam LaPorta. But what else are you going to do? Are you going to draft TJ Hawkinson, who can't ever stay healthy? Are you going to draft Travis Kelce, who just got booted to the streets by the judge, who's 49 years old? No. Are you going to draft Jonnu Smith, who's a one-year wonder, who popped up out of nowhere to flash because the rest of the pass catching core was weird and the quarterback situation was weird and somehow things just fell his way, but they're probably never going to fall that way again? Are you going to draft Mark Andrews, who managed to touchdown his way into tight end 6 last year, but was still otherwise non-existent and barely finished ahead of LaPorta, even with all those wacky touchdowns? I'm not super excited about any of those guys. So at tight end 4, LaPorta is much safer than all of them, and he still has the tight end 1 overall upside if he gets those targets and catches, which with the way the offense changes, if this team needs to throw more, might be the case. So I'm in on Sam LaPorta. Sign me up.
I'm curious to hear this other side, man. Where is he at? Oh, there he is.
No, I'm not. We're not in on Sam LaPorta. What are you talking about, Laquan? Listen, he was great as a rookie, this LaPorta fellow, because he saw 120 targets. And he saw 120 targets because Jameson Williams did diddly bupkis, and it was just Amon-Ra St. Brown in this offense. Last year, Williams saw 91 targets. And what happened? Sam LaPorta fell off. He stopped seeing the targets and the catches. Now, Jameson Williams is getting all that camp hype. The coaching staff is very excited about him heading into year three. I think he's going to take another step forward. Now he's going to see 100-plus targets. What happens to Sam Laporta's volume with that? And then you set it up in the beginning. Mr. Defender tried to brush over it. The loss of Ben Johnson, who we all credited with Sam Laporta's success and the success of this offense as a whole, and we're super excited about him going to Chicago, we have to be equally as unexcited about him leaving Detroit, but I feel like we're not. It is a huge, huge loss for Ben Johnson to head over to not just another team, but their rival. This offense is going to suffer, and let's not forget, by the way, they lost two superb interior offensive linemen. So this whole offense is going to suffer. Jared Goff is going to suffer. The run game is going to suffer. They're not going to be in the red zone as much, which means Sam Laporta is not going to score as many touchdowns. He'll still be fine. I think he'll be somewhere in that mess of the second tier tight ends that basically stretches from like tight end 4 to tight end 12. But why not draft the guy who's at tight end 10 or 11 or 12 in ADP instead of the guy who's at tight end 4? I'm going to save multiple rounds and not get this guy in the mess of a tier. Get Sam Laporta out of my face.
Man, it sounds like Prosecutor Okada is sending him to the fantasy streets. But there's a lot to iron out with Sam Laporta, man, because one, the drop-off, it was significant when Jameson Williams finally came on board because Ben Johnson was able to unlock that potential we knew he had. Ben Johnson ain't there right now. I don't know if Johnny Morton is going to be able to have that same flair on that offense as Ben Johnson had deploying these plays for a guy like Jameson Williams, designing these things up for him and knowing when to do it. So that's like something that's not being really looked at a ton. But Sam Laporta, he gives me the comfortability of like the red zone presence, his operation in and out of that offense. It feels like he's always going to be a staple in that offense to have that opportunity. So it's not like a guy that you're going to have to worry about with injuries. It's not like it's a guy you have to worry about sharing that 12 personnel with another tight end. This is the guy. This is their tight end. Jared Goff, he had that connection with Tyler Higbee back when he was with the Rams, and I understand that he needs that security blanket at times. And I think Sam Laporta is a very upgraded, a very elevated security blanket, I will say. The dude is very talented. He could be in that conversation to talk top five tight ends. And the prosecutor made a strong, strong point, man, with these changes. It's just a huge question mark. But there's other guys after him to where I have to side with the defendant here, because it's like there's so many question marks with Tucker Kraft and his role. There's so many questions with Evan Ingram, his health. We talked about Travis Kelce sending him back to the fantasy streets. It's like, who do I have after that? Do I take my chances on Loveland? Do I take my chances on Warren? These are rookies. Do I take my chances on Isaiah Likely still sharing with Mark Andrews, or do I take the chance with Mark Andrews? It's real nasty work after Sam Laporta. So Sam Laporta just seems like the cutoff where I'm like, I need to take a tight end right now. Sam Laporta's right here. I'm going to make that move and not look back. I'm just going to deal with whatever I get that outcome will be from Sam Laporta this season and call it a day. The gavel's down, man. We're saving Laporta.
I'm just excited that we're getting several wins for the prosecution, several wins for the defense here. I mean, both guys are doing a good job, I think.
They are. They're doing a very well job, man. And shout out to you, bro. Like, before we go to this break, man, Okada is on Jim Carrey level of jumping in and out of personalities to be the defendant and prosecutor. Like, I'm so locked in listening, and both personalities are so convincing. But, man, we got a few more players to get into, man. I just can't wait to get into it, bro. 3, 2, 1. We are back. Make a case. Dun, dun. You finished the rest for copyright issues. I will not be doing the Law and Order thing. I mean, look, I don't know if Dick Wolf is going to be a fan of this podcast, which he should be, man. Tap into FTN Fantasy Show. Me and Okada will be here each and every week, but more so getting back to business. This next guy, I am super confused. We hinted and gave a little teaser in the beginning of the show of where we were going with this offense in Seattle. JSN, Jackson Smith, Najigba is in question. I need to hear these cases.
This one is a pretty easy case to make, Laquan. It took half of last season before Jackson Smith and Jigba truly broke out. Okay, he broke out roughly halfway through the year. On the whole year, he still finished as the wide receiver 10 in half PPR, by the way. If you play in PPR, all of these cases get even stronger. From week 9 on, when he had broken out, he was the wide receiver 9. Okay. He's getting drafted as a wide receiver 18. So even with a half a year of not breakout, he was wide receiver 10. Over the half of the year that he was broken out, wide receiver 9, but he's getting drafted as wide receiver 18. This is very confusing to me. So you say, oh, well, the situation must have changed, must have gotten much worse. How so? Since that happened, Seattle lost DK Metcalf, they lost Tyler Lockett, and they replaced those guys with the ghost of Cooper Kupp, who you talked about earlier, and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, please. Even if you like Kupp to bounce back a little bit in Seattle, he's not Metcalf at this point in his career. And from an efficiency standpoint, we can argue about the situations and everything, but from an efficiency standpoint, JSN got an upgrade at quarterback from Geno Smith to Sam Darnold. Because Sam Darnold was superb last year, incredibly efficient. He's had his breakout, and he's locked in now as a true franchise quarterback, which is why Seattle signed him. So basically, you're telling me his situation has stayed neutral or improved across the board, but he's being drafted 12 spots below where he finished last year. I don't know what the prosecution has on deck, but there's no way you can make that make sense. That is nonsense. You have to draft JSN not only at this price, but probably a round or two higher than this price. Easy.
Well.
Okay, on Laquan, listen, you talked about this earlier. You want to know why? Because you're a smart man. All right? Cooper Kupp plays out of the slot. He needs to play even more out of the slot with how old he is. Okay? So everybody's wondering, well, who's going to play out of the slot? Because JSN's primarily a slot guy, and Cooper Kupp's primarily a slot guy.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, Cooper Kupp is 85 years old and has slowed down and become less efficient.
Yo.
When that is the case, you put that guy in the slot because that's what allows him to continue to get open. He doesn't get pressed. He doesn't have to face as good a cornerback, etc., which means JSN has to move to the outside. That's not good for him. He's better from the slot. He always has been, even since college, and it's just more efficient in general to play out of the slot. So moving him to the outside is bad. At best, he's going to split slot snaps with Kupp because Kupp will see time in the slot. He's also going to see targets because they brought him in for a reason. He's going to see significant targets. So there was a time when JSN was the lone guy here before Cooper Kupp was brought in that it was really exciting. Not anymore. Cooper Kupp is too good of a receiver. At least in name, he's going to earn targets even if efficiency-wise, he has lost some of his edge. And maybe over the course of the year, his target share drops a little bit, but it's going to hurt JSN for a while. We're trusting in a Kevin O'Connell-less Sam Darnold to uphold a 160-plus target stud wide receiver? I don't think so. Yes, Darnold had his breakout last year, but that was all KOC. Darnold is bad. He's going to fall off again. They signed him to a tiny little deal because they know he's not a true stud franchise quarterback. There's too many ifs around him. And in JSN's breakout season, he still only scored 6 touchdowns. That's not good enough for me. If you play in PPR, it gets a little easier. But if you play in half PPR, which is what, you know, best ball drafts that are happening right now are, if you're on underdog, no thank you. If you play in non-PPR still, because you still keep score with your pen and paper from the newspaper like we talked about earlier, no, you signed me out of JSN. Also, the team just seemed to index heavily towards the run game this offseason, which means even if JSN is a clear-cut number one, I don't think he's going to see as many targets as we'd like. And I think almost all of what we hope for with JSN is a massive target share. Kupp's going to take some of it. The offense is going to take some of it. Darnold's not going to be that good. I'm out.
Jesus. This is one of the players that I spoke about earlier saying that I'm a little hesitant and I'm on the fence about. Like, I just feel like I'm uncomfortable drafting him because of what the prosecutor put on the table. But then there's the great things that the defendant made a great, beautiful, painted picture of JSN being the top 10 fantasy wide receiver this season. But here is where I'm at with it, okay? When you want to keep things simple and you just don't want to overthink things, JSN is your lock in that second round. He's your wide receiver 1 if you go running back in that first round, or he is a great wide receiver 2 that strengthens that wide receiver core because there's no other guys in that pass catcher room that I feel threatened by. It's not the tight end position with Noah Fant and Elijah Arroyo. It's not with MVS. It's not definitely with Cooper Kupp on a decline of his career. So you would think Sam Darnold will understand the assignment. He will understand to get the ball at all costs to JSN. But I'm a little on the fence of that because of what the prosecutor put out there on the table. I don't think Sam Darnold is going to be good. So how valuable are these targets going to be? And if he's going to be operating in and out of that slot, that means he's going to be splitting time with Cooper Kupp on the outside versus being productive in the slot. It's counterproductive. This is the Seahawks' identity. And as a Rams fan, seeing this twice a year, every single year, they are confused of what they want to be each and every single week. Because remember how that defense, they started off fire and then they fell completely off. That offense seemed like they were a brotherhood. And then later in the weeks, we see DK Metcalf on the sideline screaming at Geno Smith, and then both of them were traded and gone. This is just too much for me, Okada. So we're going to have to hit that gavel and send JSN back to the fantasy streets, man. Ooh. I'm out.
Tough. All right. I'll give you both sides of the coin. Xavier Worthy started slow. I'll give it to you. As a rookie, outside of his first touch, which was a touchdown, he started a little slow. Yeah. But with rookies, we care much less about the beginning of the year. We care about how they finish. Over his last six games, including the run to the Super Bowl, so including those playoff games, he averaged 18.3 half PPR fantasy points per game, Laquan. 8.7 targets per game, 6.7 catches per game, 80 yards per game with 5 touchdowns over those last six games. That is heavy work. His 17-game pace of those numbers, 148 targets, 114 catches, 1,860 yards, 14 touchdowns.
Tyreek Hill numbers right there, boy.
That is... it's Tyreek Hill numbers, you say? Oh, how interesting you bring that up, Laquan. Let me give you a quick...
strengthen the king, gentlemen.
Let me give you an itty-bitty little comparison here. I'm going to give you two players. Player A, rookie season, 83 targets, 61 catches, 593 yards, 6 touchdowns. Not bad. Player B, 98 targets, 59 catches, 638 yards, 6 touchdowns. Who guys B? I wonder, is there perhaps a chance that player B is Xavier Worthy and player A, who had less numbers across the board, is Tyreek Hill, former Chiefs speedster? You're telling me they had basically the exact same numbers? Sign me up. He is always going to be the fastest guy in the field. And they drafted him in the first round with Rashee Rice on the roster because they knew they wanted one of these guys. It is a smash. Get Xavier Worthy.
That sounds strong. That sounds strong, man. I got to say, that sounds like it is strong.
Laquan, at best, that sounded like mildly, decently okay. Like 10-pound curls strong. All right. Let me give you the true case about Xavier Worthy. First of all, Rashee Rice is going to be back and will likely be the primary target. He was gone for most of last year. We just talked about this with Travis Kelce. Hollywood Brown will be back. He played 2 games. He's going to be back in full. Travis Kelce is still seeing a boatload of targets. So you're telling me this little guy who managed to put together a half-decent fantasy season because two of the main wide receivers played barely any time at all is still going to be a wide receiver 21 level ADP player with all those guys back? No, thank you. Also, and more importantly, perhaps.
You're so kind.
Let's talk about 165 pounds, Laquan. Listen, I'm not trying to be sizist here, okay? Except that I am.
Xavier
Worthy's 165 pounds. No receiver, not one, in the last 30 years has topped 160 fantasy points at under 170 pounds. The cutoff to be a wide receiver two is typically around 170 to 180 fantasy points. So no one at Xavier Worthy's size in the last 3 decades has finished close to wide receiver 2 range, and yet we're drafting him at wide receiver 21 ADP. It is impossibly stupid. He will have some flash plays, but he will not return value, and he will be unbelievably volatile. You cannot draft him this high. No way, no.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. This is a strong case for a guy that I already was on the fence for. But the prosecution made some clear and gut-punching points, and then it's one of those things where history tends to repeat itself, and it could be in a negative way. I mean, I don't expect Xavier Worthy to break out and be this, you know, earth-shattering NFL history guy, like first ever of his size to do the damn thing, because the difference between Tyreek Hill and Xavier Worthy is obviously that body and frame. And I get they're both fast, but to play in this league, got to have some weight on you. Got to have, you know, that type of breakaway speed after making contact with one of these freaking thumper Thumper's safety. So it's like, I feel like more so with Xavier Worthy, wide receiver 21, maybe too expensive for me. And I get that he was so talented when everything fell apart, but you do have Rashid Rice coming back. You do have Hollywood Brown back. These are just guys to some folks, but I really think Rashid Rice is the wide receiver one there. He's the number one target. And this is including Travis Kelce in that wheelhouse. Rashid Rice looks good in return, you know, with his workouts right now. So I think he should be rehabbing on track to be week one startable. So yeah. We got to send Xavier Worthy back to the fantasy streets, man. Gavel down, get him out of here, man. And bye-bye. To our next guy in question, Okada, I just want to hear a couple things from the defender. And I hope that he hits these key things, because Calvin Ridley is such an interesting wide receiver in an interesting situation, because we know Calvin Ridley can ball. But there are certain elements there that you need to sell me on, because I am on the clock, okay? And I want Calvin Ridley.
Ooh.
Do I get him? Make a case.
All right. I'll make you a case, Laquan. It's not that hard to make. Calvin Ridley's current ADP is wide receiver 32. So when you're talking about being on the clock and deciding if you want Calvin Ridley, it's late in drafts. It's wide receiver 32. It's late wide receiver 3 range at that kind of ADP. Last year, with garbage galore at quarterback, Calvin Ridley was the wide receiver 27, which, for those of you who are not math majors, is better than wide receiver 32. The year prior in Jacksonville, he was a wide receiver 17. In fact, Calvin Ridley has never finished lower than wide receiver 27 in a season that he played at least 5 games, or more than 5 games, because he played 5 games and then got injured in that one year. Now, he's getting a number one overall quarterback in Cameron Ward, who is very willing to sling the ball, which we were kind of excited about with Will Levis last year, except we forgot the fact that Will Levis is willing to sling it, but sucks. Cameron Moore does not suck. He is very talented, which is why he went number one overall, but he is still willing to sling it, which plays into Ridley's strengths. And if you take out 2024, which is the one year he did not play with a first-round quarterback, the rest of his career, Matt Ryan and Trevor Lawrence. So if you take out that last year fluke, Calvin Ridley's 17-game pace throughout his career is 83 catches, 1,100 yards, and 9 touchdowns. Forget wide receiver 32. That's wide receiver 1 range. And his competition for targets over there is Tyler Lockett, the ghost of Tyler Lockett, and Jefferson, a bunch of day 3 rookies, and Chiga Okonkwo. So Calvin Ridley is going to be the target leader. He's going to be the downfield leader. He's going to be the red zone leader. He is going to be a stud. This is an unbelievably low price for Calvin Ridley. There's no way you can't draft him. Smash the button, Laquan.
You know what? I'm on the clock. I guess so. I mean, hold up. Hold up.
Nah.
Oh, man. Don't
nah,
do it.
Nah. That was not a bad case by the defense. All right. I'll give it to him. But here's the thing. There's a lot of that rides on Cameron Ward in arguably the worst offense in football. Yes, Ward was the number one quarterback, but that's because it was a weak class. All right. He would not be the number one quarterback in several classes. Last year, he might not have been the number 5 quarterback. We are excited about him because he went number one, but we can't get too overly excited just because a guy goes at number one. We have to go by their actual profile, and Ward is no lock to be a stud, especially as a rookie in what should be an absolutely garbage offense. Also, because he was drafted old and he missed an entire year after missing most of a year due to injury, we sometimes forget Calvin Ridley is already 30 years old. He's over the hill. He's out of his prime. And he hasn't been a top 16 fantasy wide receiver since 2020. And I get what the defense would say. Well, he's not getting drafted anywhere near there. True. But the guys you can draft around him are guys who have that kind of upside. Jordan Addison, Rome Odunze, Chris Godwin. You're telling me you wouldn't have those guys on your lineup who can easily be borderline wide receiver ones instead of this guy who hasn't been top 16 in 5 years? The risk of the floor falling out is way too high. It is not worth the limited reward you might get with Ridley, even with Mr. Number 1 QB. So no, I'm not drafting Mr. 30-year-old. Get him out.
Oh, you made a strong case there, Mr. Prosecutor. Look at it like this. He is going to see a lot of volume. And I'm always a guy that says, you know, volume is king, but how valuable are these targets going to be? A guy can have like a 29% target share and then have like three touchdowns and less than 1,000 yards. This is things that could be possible. That's full indication that this offense is bad, bad, bad. And again, I don't have any real outlook for Cam Ward on a fantasy scale. I just have him going into a new situation. There's nobody over his shoulder he has to look out with. And Cam Ward has some of those qualities. And I say that he has the qualities to be a starting quarterback in this league. He has the Patrick Mahomes-like awareness in the pocket. He has the effort ball like Josh Allen. These are qualities of a quarterback you can build on, but discipline it. And with a 30-year-old wide receiver in Calvin Ridley, which you hit on, he may be out of his prime to hit those numbers that we expect. We might have to send him back to the fantasy streets, man, because you mentioned guys like Jordan Addison that I just was like, ooh, yeah, you're right. If I can get a Jordan Addison over Calvin Ridley, why would I leave Jordan Addison on the board? Why would I gift that to my league mate that's happening to pick right? He's on deck. He could give himself a Jordan Addison as a wide receiver three, ladies and gentlemen, as a flex play week to week. That's a start and forget whatever you think about J.J. McCarthy. But Jordan Addison can run every single route Justin Jefferson can do, man. You're getting a guy that's in a high power offense running under KOC. Boy, Calvin Ridley back, gaveled down to the fantasy streets.
Oh, bye-bye, Calvin Ridley.
Sheesh, man. I mean, look, we got a few more guys. Let's take another quick break, and then we're going to finish this up with some interesting running backs that I think that we need to have in question. So we are back, and listen, these running backs that are in question are guys that I am on the clock for, and I need to know if I'm dragging them off the board and making a roster spot. And the first in question, bring them up, Chase Brown for the Cincinnati Bengals. I need to hear a case if he is worth the roster spot with a third round ADP. Let's be clear. It's a third round ADP. If I went wide receiver, I need to hear the case of why Chase Brown should be my RB1.
It's an interesting question, Laquan. RB11 is very pricey. He had his first shot at legit touches last year, and he finishes the RB12. So that's around there. It's not better than RB11. So that raises some questions. Okay, well, let me give you the answers. That RB12 finish included three games at the start of the year that he saw 10 or fewer touches before he became the guy, and a rest week in week 18. From weeks 4 through 17, the weeks that he played and was the guy, he was the RB6. Your Honor, the RB6? Pause on that for a second. Well, that was a 13-game stretch. He was not just an RB1, he was a top-tier RB1. And somehow he's being drafted as the RB11. The Bengals recognize how good he was for them. And so instead of signing someone to, you know, significant to take touches away, they stuck with Mr. Plotter Zach Moss. They signed Mr. Two Touchdowns a Season Samaje Perine. And they waited until the sixth round to draft Taj Brooks, the rookie. So this remains Brown's backfield. He is the guy. And the offense is still one of the best in the league under Joe Burrow. They are going to score. They are going to run the ball up and down the field with ease, and he is the RB1 for that offense. So he's going to be an RB1 for fantasy, and based off what we saw last year, he's probably going to be a top six running back for fantasy. So you're getting a value. Book it.
Chase Brown. Brown.
First of all, Brown wasn't even all that great last year. He was 15th in EPA per attempt and avoided tackle rate. He was 27th in success rate. He was 32nd in yards after contact per attempt and an explosive run rate. All of that from FTN Stats Hub, which you should go check out because you can get tons of good stuff there to figure out the numbers for yourself.
Subscribe.
He was not great. He was an inefficient back. And yes, he managed 54 receptions for 360 yards and 4 touchdowns, which helped make up for the lack of superb analytical efficiency as a running back. But that stupid guy who gave the defense a minute ago, he forgot to mention when he brushed over Samaje Perine that Samaje Perine is Mr. Pass Catcher. In his two seasons in Cincy, his last two seasons in Cincy, he caught 65 catches for 5 touchdowns. He's a legitimate threat to steal receiving work. Also, Zach Moss, who is still there, missed the last 9 games of last season. So yes, Chase Brown was very good over the home stretch. But that's because Zach Moss was missing. And everybody, including the defense, wants to brush over that kind of thing. When Moss was healthy over the first 8 weeks, Brown was the RB26 in fantasy. Not the RB6, the RB26. So it feels, you think that Brown survived the offseason because they didn't bring anyone huge. But in fact, he didn't, because they brought in just the type of guys who can steal his work, and they got the kind of guy back who they were giving carries over Chase Brown. Don't be surprised if this is a three-way committee in which Chase Brown sees maybe 50% of the work. That is not enough to finish as the RB11. He's going to disappoint at ADP.
Ooh, Chase Brown. I mean, look, I know folks are out there pounding the table hard for Chase Brown. I know their ears are bleeding right now from what that prosecutor said. And I hear both sides. And here's the scary part about it. Like, when you mention his metrics of the juke rate and efficiency and all that other stuff with Zach Moss those first 8 weeks, and that needs to be accounted for. There's bodies in that room, and the Bengals have constantly reminded us that they want to have a constant body in that backfield. When Zach Moss was hurt, they traded for Khalil Herbert. Why did they do that? They didn't need to do that, but they did that. They drafted Taj Brooks. It's not a Travion Henderson or RJ Harvey that they had visits with. It's a Taj Brooks. And I think Brooks, he could work his way to get some touches as well to be a contributor, but it's just too many bodies there that they don't feel secure of just completely handing the keys to Chase Brown. So that's why I'm more so ready to throw into the fantasy streets. And I think more so the only thing that the defender really sold me on is his hype that he had without the bodies in that backfield, you know? So he got to go. Send Chase Brown to the fantasy streets.
We got a bad streak here. The defense needs a win.
Yeah, we might have to take a recess or a lunch or something, man. But the next guy in question. Now, this is just one of those things. I don't like to talk about my Jersey guys, man. I don't like to talk about them in bad light, but he was banged up last season. Isaiah Pacheco, Mr. Angry Runner. I hate the ground so much. Pacheco at RB29 going in the seventh round. Can you convince me to take him off the board right now in the seventh round?
I can convince you quite easily, Laquan. We're going to get a win for the defense here, or my name isn't Defender Matt Okada. Listen, over the last two seasons, Isaiah Pacheco has played 50%+ of the snaps in 18 games, including the playoffs. In those 18 games, he has averaged 14.3 fantasy points per game on 20 touches per game with 12 touchdowns. 14 fantasy points a game is fringe RB1 territory. So you're telling me that a guy who, when he gets on the field and gets his work, is a fringe RB1, is going at RB29 in ADP, and we're not drafting him? Have we lost our minds? Now, yes, he missed a lot of time in 2024 with a fractured fibula, and then he didn't see that snap share when he came back, because he rushed back very surprisingly quickly and was impressive in the fact that he returned at all from the injury he suffered in the middle of the season. So it wasn't great, but it's going to get better. He's going to get back to 100% full strength, and he's going to be great. Meanwhile, Kansas City did not make any flashy moves to replace him, and it seems very likely that he will be back in the driver's seat in 2025. Also, with the receivers returning healthy, which we talked about earlier, I think there's a chance this offense gets quite a bit better overall and that the run game takes a step upwards. So you're telling me that I can get Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes' clear RB1, who's been a borderline fantasy RB1 when he's the lead back, for RB29 price? How on earth would I not draft him at that price? This is a smash. You are not getting anybody with legitimate RB1 upside this late in the draft. Pick him up.
Solid case. Took some notes. Noteworthy. All right. Let's little convince me.
Was it a solid case though, Laquan? I really wonder if it actually was a solid case. Listen, that guy who just defended Isaiah Pacheco, he mentioned the 18 games that Pacheco hit 50%+ of snaps. Oh, and he was good in those games. Okay, well, that's fair enough. There's been 41 games the Chiefs have played over the last two seasons, Laquan. Have you ever heard the phrase, the best ability is availability?
Oh, yeah. Because one of my favorite phrases.
I tell you who doesn't have that ability. It's Isaiah Pacheco, who's missed 23 games over these last two seasons that the Chiefs have played. Also, and the defense tried to brush over this, post-fibula injury, Pacheco was awful. 2.8 yards per carry. And you can say, oh, well, he's going to get better. There's no guarantee of that. This isn't like an ACL where we have data to show you get better in year two after the return. This is a fractured fibula. It's a tough thing to deal with. And this is very similar, in a way, to the Chase Brown situation. No, Kansas City didn't make any splashes in free agency at running back. But they already had Kareem Hunt and Carson Steele on the roster, who were both very viable in Pacheco's absence and are the kinds of guys who can take legitimate carries. And they did add Elijah Mitchell, who has shown the ability to produce with volume before and could easily do it again. That is a lot of guys that could take up the mantle for Kansas City the second that Pacheco struggles to find his former juice or gets injured again, because he has that violent running style that is dangerous to your health. So you can take a massive risk, but this is a guy who might not be a starting running back by week two or three. That is a big risk to take when you could instead go for guys like Jordan Mason, Laquan. I know you like Jordan Mason. Cam Scadaboo at RB32. Cam Scadaboo, my guy. Jordan Mason's your guy. You can get both those guys later than Isaiah Pacheco. Neither of them has the concerns that Pacheco does. So why would I draft?
That's an even better case. This might be a clean sweep here, man. Oh, my God, man. Now, you hit some nails on the head with your prosecution presentation, because honestly, that's a lot of mouths to feed in that backfield. And there's actually another running back, Rashard Smith. He is a pass-catching former wide receiver, natural hands, explosive plays. He's one of the most electrifying running backs out of this class. And if you got Matt Nagy on the sticks, he's going to want to throw that ball. And I don't think Pacheco, he's one of the best pass-catching running backs out there, but there needs to be a Jarrett McKinnon presence back there. And I think that's going to be Rashard Smith. And I think that's going to be a lot of BS talk each and every week. Guys pounding the table for Pacheco, and availability is your best ability. And I do not see this coming from Pacheco. And I cannot roll the dice when you waving a $100 bill in my face over there, Okada, with Jordan Mason in later rounds, which I am cashing in on, by the way. Mm. Yes, sir. Back to the fantasy streets you go, Mr. Isaiah Pacheco.
Ooh, the defense this is struggling.
This is crazy. The defense is struggling. This is a three clean sweep. Can we make it up, though? This last one. And we've been rocking for a while now with this make it case. Now, this guy, I feel like Alvin Kamara down in New Orleans is the only sole purpose that we even know New Orleans still has a team. So sell me a case on why I should be drafting Alvin Kamara.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to object to the prosecution using Jordan Mason to butter up the judge. That's dirty. That's dirty work.
That's real dirty work right there.
Having said that, Alvin Kamara set a career high last year in rushing yards. He's been in this league for, what, eight seasons, something like that? 950 rushing yards last year. That's a career high. He also still snagged 68 catches for 543 yards. This offense sucked last year. Everybody's freaking out about the Saints offense sucking. They were terrible last year. They had the first 2 weeks, we were like, what on earth is Clint Kubiak cooking? This team is suddenly the most explosive offense in the NFL. And then everything fell off a cliff. It was one of the most baffling two-week stretches of the entire year last year. And yeah, as a result, he only scored 8 touchdowns because the offense was not good. But even with just scoring 8 touchdowns, Laquan, he finished as the RB10 in just 14 games. And he's being drafted as the RB19. So missed games, offense was bad, still finished as a RB1 as the RB10, 9 spots ahead of where he's getting drafted. They lost Derek Carr, but it's not like Carr was upholding a functional offense last year. In fact, he was missing for a bunch of the year, and they were just as bad when he was gone as they were when he was there. In fact, you want to talk about some data? In 3 of the 4 games that Kamara played without Derek Carr, he was a top 17 running back. Top 17 is better than 19, which is his ADP. And this is the key point, and you teed it when you brought up Alvin Kamara. He is going to see volume. Last year, only Saquon Barkley, Jonathan Taylor, Kyren Williams, and Bijan Robinson had more touches per game than Alvin Kamara. There is no reason that is going to change this season. They have added no weaponry. I am not scared of anybody there. It is going to be a whole lot of 2.5 to 3 yard runs from Alvin Kamara and dump offs. Is it going to be efficient? No. But is he going to see 300 plus touches and be in a borderline RB1 ahead of his RB19 ADP? Absolutely, yes. You can't convince me that this bad offense is going to ruin him because it didn't last year. Sign me up.
Wowzers. That wowzers. I'm not quite sure the prosecutor can come in with anything to shy me away from that guy, but I'm curious to hear him out.
Okay. That was a half-decent case from the defense. Here's the issues, Laquan.
Wow.
Those three missed games that the defense brushed over, those were at the very end of last year with a groin injury. I don't like the sounds of that. I especially don't like the sounds of that when you tell me that Alvin Kamara turns 30 years old in a month. That is bad news bears for running back. That is the cliff galore, and he's coming into the cliff off of an injury at the end of last year. Meanwhile, the Saints are going to be running a brand new offense because Kubiak is out and Doug Nussmeier is in at OC with some combination, maybe, of Tyler Shuck, Spencer Rattler, or Jake Haener at the helm. Yes, the offense was bad last year. I'll give it to the defense. It was bad. But it can always get worse, Judge. It can always get worse. And let me tell you something. Doug Nussmeier and Shuck Rattler Haener, whatever the combo is absolutely going to be worse. Beyond Kamara and the quarterback and the OC, what do they have? On the outside, they've got three skinny, injury-prone wide receivers. They've got unexciting tight ends. They've got the 24th ranked offensive line, if you go by our FTN expert, Dan Fornek. This offense is trash. However trashy it was last year, it is that trash plus a whole bunch of extra trash. We're talking Grinch levels of trash. Kamara will see touches for as long as he stays healthy. Don't know how long that's going to be. But Mans may never sniff the end zone. He might score three touchdowns all year. And you can get guys in his range like Kenneth Walker, who, if he's healthy, will be much better. Admittedly, the injuries are concerning. But Kenneth Walker, or I see the concern, Laquan. How about Travion Henderson, James Conner, DeAndre Swift? Heck, even Quinshon Judkins or Caleb Johnson. Those guys are all going in the same range or later, and all of them are more exciting in better offenses or equally good offenses. I should say equally bad offenses in the case of Judkins, but with at least some hope of weaponry around him. There is no hope for Kamara here. The cliff has arrived, and he's falling way down it. RB3 at best, not RB1980.
Wow. 30-year-old cliff is arriving. The offense could get worse. It could get worse. It could definitely be a situation where we could be looking at a Spencer Rattler or Tyler Shuck. Oh, man. And look, this is a great case for the fact that this is why roster building matters. Where he's going in drafts is the fifth round. And you've named some other guys that have, if not the same questions, or better value in that range. And guys like Kenneth Walker, I'm a little skeptical about, but you said DeAndre Swift. Where we are a DeAndre Swift stan pod. We are here for the Swifties. We are here for DeAndre Swift. So that brings a strong case of like, all right, I could pivot. But here's the thing. I don't think any of those running backs that I've named, even with their question marks or not, are going to see as many catches as Alvin Kamara. I am a sucker for a running back that's going to get heavy volume on both sides. If it's going to be carries, if it's going to be catches and targets. That's all I need for my running back. That is the understanding of that assignment. They were god awful last year, and he still finished as a top six running back last year. Volume is king, and it's even more stronger when it's a running back getting volume out through the ground and through the air. This man is a free man. We're going to rock with Alvin Kamara, ladies and gentlemen.
Boy, let's go. Make a case.
The defense brings it home.
Yeah, the defense comes out strong, brings it home, man. With Alvin Kamara, RB19, worth a roster spot. And again, with all these players that we went over today, bro, like, I do feel like this could help some folks to hear both sides. And I mean, look, let's take a second, man, and clap it up for Okada, man. Listen, it's a hard job to sit here to make cases is for these guys to play the brain, left and right brain of the fantasy streets of these scenarios. And Okada laid it out there on a Jim Carrey level with the personality changes. Like, this is me, myself, and Irene level here, Matt Okada. Thank you for doing this. And again, it's one of those things that this segment is going to live and breathe forever, man. And hell of a job today, bro, man. How do you feel? Because, like, you sitting here rocking with both. Are the brains, the prosecutor defense, shaking hands in the brain right now?
No. The prosecution and defense hate each other eternally. They will never be friends. And the next time we bring this segment back, there may be fist fighting. But it was a ton of fun. And, you know, I will say this. There are cases to be made on both sides of all these guys. And I feel like this was an especially useful segment. And good for the podcast listeners and for anybody who's paying attention, because it's valuable to acknowledge that. Like, there are people on both sides of all these guys. And to just come in here and give our one side of the opinion we think, you know, that we've come to establish over whatever period of time, maybe is doing a disservice sometimes. So I think it's nice to take a look at both sides. I appreciate it for myself, looking into these guys and seeing what I actually thought about them after comparing both sides. And I think the judge made some pretty fair verdicts most of the time, maybe not all of them.
That's the defense speaking right there. That's the defense. That's the defense speaking.
It was good stuff, though. Good stuff.
Nah, this is absolutely dope, man. This has been another great episode, man. And of course, you guys are out there listening. Make sure you're downloading, liking, and jumping onto the FTNFantasy.com page. Subscribe, man. It's Father's Day this weekend, man. Call your dads. Tell them you love them, man. Don't send them a tie. Don't send him no new socks. Get the FTN Fantasy Draft Kit, okay? Let him have something valuable this season so he can go home and lock in and not scream at his phone or TV all season long because he ain't got the number one rankings out there from FTN Fantasy. Listen, it's been a pleasure, my guy. Until next time.